and welcome to the Emotional Autoimmunity Podcast. I'm your host, Kerry Jeffrey. This podcast is all about having conversations about real life with chronic illness, bringing you interviews, information, and inspiration to help you live your best life with chronic illness. Hi everyone, welcome to episode 3 of the Emotional Autoimmunity Podcast. And today my special guest is Jessie St. Jean of the AIP Sisterhood. Now, Jessie was finally diagnosed with ulcerative colitis in 2013 after a lifetime of unexplained digestive symptoms and immune health issues. She's married to a wonderful husband of 2 years. She loves to cook. She enjoys practicing yoga and spending time outdoors. And Jessie is currently living about 80% symptom free. So welcome, Jessie. So lovely to get to talk to you today.
Thank you very much.
So, wow, it sounds like from that you've been pretty much living with ulcerative colitis for most of your life.
Yes. So I was diagnosed when I was 19. So I was pretty young. I was in college, had just a sophomore in college, so 2 years in. And I'm 25 now. So it's been about 5.5 years. And yeah, like you had mentioned, I had pretty much struggled with a lifetime of various health issues leading up to being diagnosed when I was 19. So being sick is something that I'm very familiar with.
And that must have had a massive impact on your life and your ability to study and, you know, just enjoy being a kid.
Yeah, you know, it really did. I mean, I think up until when I was diagnosed when I was 19, I lived a normal life. I went to high school, you know, I had a very active social life. I was very, very busy, probably overextended myself a lot. So then when I was diagnosed, it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks because everything that I knew about living life up to that point completely changed. And I think it was really crucial at that time because, you know, when you're 19 is a time when you're young, you're supposed to be enjoying your body, enjoying your life. The whole world is supposed to be available to you. And suddenly none of that was true for me when I was diagnosed. So it was definitely challenging.
And how did you finally manage to get that diagnosis? Like, was it something you'd been looking for, you know, what was wrong for years?
Well, I think it was partly cumulative. You know, I did a series of genetic testing when I was about 15 and found out that I was gluten intolerant. I tried testing for celiac disease, and I was actually initially diagnosed in high school with irritable bowel syndrome. But then when I was in college, I went through a series of really stressful life circumstances. I was in a really stressful degree program that was really rigorous and was in a very toxic relationship at the time. And I think that was a trigger for my body to have my first, I guess, official ulcerative colitis flare, but I didn't know what it was at the time. So that was really the catalyst for me to go see a gastroenterologist and have my first colonoscopy to diagnose ulcerative colitis. And that's kind of how that ball got rolling, I guess.
And so, can you just explain, I mean, to me, because I don't know much about ulcerative colitis apart from it's an autoimmune inflammatory condition of the gut and the bowel. So what actually happens? Like, what do you experience when you're having a flare, or what sort of symptoms do you have?
Yeah, so I actually love to talk about this because I feel like inflammatory bowel disease is not a pretty disease, so people don't talk about it a lot when it comes to its symptoms because it's not pleasant. But one of the primary symptoms is diarrhea. In my case, when it's been at its most severe, I've had, you know, diarrhea up to 10, 12 times a day. So it can leave you pretty immobilized. For one, you just can't leave your house because you can't be far from a toilet. But it also just can dehydrate you significantly and make you really tired. So that's one of the primary symptoms. And then rectal bleeding, sometimes either at the farther end of the colon, which is more of like the black internal bleeding, and then or more towards the end of the colon, which is like the bright red bleeding, abdominal cramping, joint pain from inflammation, fatigue, things like that.
And that sounds incredibly limiting. And as you said, you're only 19 years old, and then you got this diagnosis. I mean, how was it presented to you? I mean, did they... I mean, what I found in my experience is doctors either tend to trivialize it or maximize it, like make it, they'll give you the worst possible, really scary possibilities of what might happen. So where were you on that spectrum?
I think it was definitely more on the trivial end. It was not a pleasant experience from what I remember. My sister had actually been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis about a year before I had. And she was working with the gastroenterologist that I ended up seeing. So he was familiar with our family history. And I had a hunch, you know, that I might also have ulcerative colitis kind of going into my diagnosis. So when I had my colonoscopy, you know, they wheeled me out of the examination room. I was still groggy from the anesthesia. And the doctor who did my procedure, who is a different doctor than I have now, just, I remember is that he flew the door open, shoved papers in my face and said, "Well, congratulations, you have ulcerative colitis, just like you thought," and then left.
Oh my goodness.
So I was just, and I don't remember anything else. So thankfully I had my mom there with me at the time. Cause apparently then once I got dressed, you know, and put my pants on, we went to the doctor's office to sit for 30 minutes while he then apparently proceeded to tell me all about ulcerative colitis, but I have no recollection of any of that experience. So it definitely got off to a rocky start, I would say.
Did it, I mean, what was it like having watched your sister go through it? Did that give you any fears, or was it actually like, oh, well, I feel a bit more relieved because I can see how my sister's been dealing with it and that she's managing it? Like, did that help?
I think it helped from the perspective that I had somebody immediately that I could talk to who I knew would understand life with chronic illness. But it's actually interesting because her and I's disease, even though we have the same diagnosis, presents very differently. I have what you would consider to be like textbook ulcerative colitis. So the symptoms I described earlier describe me to a T. But with my sister, her ulcerative colitis isn't as widespread in her colon. So her symptoms present very differently. So as far as that aspect of the diagnosis process was concerned, her and I had a very different experience. So it was, there's a lot of learning curve associated with me.
Yeah. And when do you think it really hit home to you? Like when you really realized I've got this life-changing diagnosis, even though it makes sense considering everything else that I've had. I mean, it's that reality, isn't it? That somebody says, well, you've got this thing, it's not going away and it's progressive and there's the potential that it could get worse. I mean, at 19, how do you even wrap your mind around that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And honestly, it hasn't been until this past year. So almost 5 years later, the reality of living with a chronic illness has finally sunk in with me. I think I spent the first, probably good first 5 years of my diagnosis and of my healing journey shifting between being in denial and bargaining. You know, I compare it a lot to the grief experience, you know, where I just, when I was first diagnosed, I was young, I was overwhelmed, and I couldn't handle any of it. So I just kind of stuck my head in the sand, or I took the medicine that my doctor told me to take and then went along my merry way, just pretending that this wasn't happening to me. And then unfortunately, as my symptoms kept getting worse and worse and things weren't helping, you know, the medicine that I was taking wasn't helping. And, you know, some of my dietary changes weren't helping. It really got to a point this past year when I had to make a serious decision to go on a more serious medication, where the reality sunk in and I finally realized, like, this is something that this is my life, you know, and this is my reality. And I have to find a way to make that work for me, you know, and really take ownership of it finally. So it took a lot longer than I think I thought it would, honestly.
And I think that's a pretty normal experience. I think we get stuck in denial and, you know, anger and grief, and then bouncing back and forth. That can honestly take years. And I've seen people who actually never get out of denial. Like, they're just, nope, this isn't existing. I'm not going to give in to this. I'm just going to pretend it's not there. I'm not going to give it any power, you know, all of these different things that keep them stuck. So it's not really until you get, as you said, to that place where you go, this is my reality. Now it's up to me. Like, it's really only up to me. There's nobody else that can do this. So what do you think really helped you reach that point of saying, I've got to do this, I've got to make this shift?
I think for me, I don't know, I'm still trying to figure it out, quite honestly, but as I've been thinking about it over the past year, I think it was what really pushed me to kind of reach that place of acceptance was coming to this crossroads where I had to make a decision. And, you know, I had initially tried medication when I was first diagnosed, and it didn't work. And I wasn't willing at the time to pursue more serious medication because of my fears associated with that and the side effects. So I ran in the opposite direction and followed more of the, I guess, holistic approach. You know, I follow the autoimmune protocol diet, and I made some very serious life changes and managed my stress and did acupuncture and all of this stuff. And it worked for a period of time. But then again, you know, about 2 years ago, I went through another series of life changes where I graduated college and I got married and moved and started a new career, and my body stopped responding in the same way that it used to a lot of those lifestyle changes. And I knew that I needed to do something different for my body because I couldn't continue in this prolonged state of flare. But there wasn't anybody telling me what decision to make. You know, I had to do it on my own. And so that's really when I think it was the first time that I actually picked up a book and read about my disease on my own rather than having somebody tell me about it, you know, because up to that point it had just been, you know, I'll do what my sister's doing, or I'll just do what my doctor tells me to do. Or I think I finally realized I had never in 5 years taken the time to do my own research, you know, and come up with my own opinions about things and really take ownership of that. So having to do research on all the different medication options that were available to me and decide what would be the best fit for me, I think was really the push that I needed to really own, I guess, my life and my disease. So.
And from what I've heard, a lot of those drugs are pretty heavy duty and can come with some pretty scary side effects. So how do you, I mean, for anybody who's perhaps in your situation now, I know the biggest stumbling block is a lot of people think they don't have a choice. Like, the doctor says, you must take this drug or there's no other choice. But there is a choice. And how do you sort of take that power to make that choice about what's going to be right for you?
I think I have to think about that for a minute. I think on the one hand, I think a lot of people who are using medication as a treatment option come to a point where, on the one hand, you don't necessarily have a choice as far as what options are available to you. But I always believe that you do still have a choice in how you choose to respond to that. You know, so in my case, the last tier of medication, the doctors use a tier class of medication when treating ulcerative colitis medically. So you have your low risk, low reward medications on the bottom, and then you kind of move up to the more of the high risk, hopefully high reward medications. So the last class of medications on that tier are biologics. And for anybody who has inflammatory bowel disease, they know that choosing a medical treatment option is like choosing between a rock and a hard place. You know, I compare it to having to choose between like a rock falling on your head or a piano falling on your head. Neither one is really a great option, but you have to choose the lesser of the two evils, you know, or what would be a better option for you. So that's when medication, or that's when research and doing my own research really kind of came into play. Because I learned through my research that even though that biologic class of drugs isn't appealing necessarily on the surface, and it does have a lot of serious side effects that come along with it, I still had a choice within that class of medications of which one I wanted to pursue. So then that's how I ended up on the medication that I'm on now, which is Entyvio. It's still a biologic, but it's a different type of biologic than some of the more common ones that people are familiar with, like Humira or Remicade, in that it suppresses a different chemical messenger in the body that's only primarily present in the gastrointestinal tract, as opposed to Humira, Remicade, which is more system-wide. So because of that, the side effects are a lot less and just different than that of the Humira and Remicade. So so for me, it was just really about doing my homework, you know, and realizing like, okay, I have to go down this road for medication because I know I don't have a choice in that, but I can still empower myself to at least make a choice within, you know, what was required of me, I guess.
Mm. And that's really beautifully said, because I really I believe that we've got to have that attitude that even though it can feel like you don't have a choice with the situation that you're in, you always have a choice in how you choose to see yourself in that situation and look for the places where you can exert some choice and some control, even if it's just saying, well, if I've got to do this thing, then I'm going to do this in the way that's going to make me feel as comfortable as I can about it, or as peace as I can about this. And I think that's one of the things, Jesse, do you think that a lot of people don't understand that chronic illness adds so many layers of complexity to your life? Like, there's all these additional considerations and choices and negotiations and things you've got to have to live a so-called normal life.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And sometimes I get envious of some of the people in my peer group because I realize that they don't have to make those choices, at least not right now. You know, they don't have to be as mindful about how they live their lives because it doesn't affect them on the level that it affects me. You know, every single morning when I wake up, I have to decide how I'm going to exert my energy that day, you know, or I have to think very far in advance, you know, about how I can ensure that I have enough energy to do this activity that I planned 2 weeks from now, you know, and other people who don't live with chronic illness don't have to do that. And I think that, yeah, it's something like you said, is hard for people to understand unless they have to live their lives that way.
Mm. And getting all of this at such a young age, I mean, you must have had, I guess, an idea when you were going to college, what you were going to do and what you were going to be. Have you found that chronic illness has created new like career pathways or opportunities for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny to think, you know, when I was going into college, my pre-disease self, I guess, I had a very different image of what my life would look like. You know, I thought I was going to have a high-powered career and be a researcher and all of this stuff. And that was something that I had to grieve a lot when I was first diagnosed, because I realized that couldn't be my reality anymore. You know, I always used to want to travel or do overseas mission work. And that's something that I'm still grieving, quite honestly, because I love to travel and my husband loves to travel, but I have to be a lot more careful about my travel choices now. So my life has changed significantly and my goals and my dreams have changed significantly, but I think so much of it is for the better. You know, I ate horribly before I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. I mean, I was 19, so, you know, I ate the standard college student American diet of ramen noodles and pizza and macaroni and cheese. But if I hadn't have been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis when I had and been forced to learn how to cook and been forced to change my eating habits, the whole trajectory of my life could have looked a lot different, you know, and I wouldn't have had the appreciation for food that I do now. And I don't think I wouldn't have realized my love for cooking and my love for food in the way that I do now, you know? And because of that, I've actually been inspired to pursue the nutritional therapy practitioner program through the Nutritional Therapy Association. So that's something that I'm currently studying right now, which I'm loving. I'm only in like week two, but I'm already loving it. So it's definitely opened up a whole world of opportunity that wouldn't have been there if I hadn't have been diagnosed.
And how do you deal with, you know, these ongoing griefs of things, you know, when you look back at your dreams or for somebody like me, I'm 59 now and I didn't get chronic illness until 4 years ago. So I've had this whole life, like 50 something years of life without chronic disease, even though I know really I probably had it since I was a child, but still I thought I was healthy. So when you think and believe that you're healthy and normal, there's a whole lot more doors of possibilities that are open. And how do you deal with that ongoing grief about the things that you've lost or the things that you'll never do that you thought you would do, or all of those little ongoing losses?
Yeah. You know, I think that's something that I am honestly still figuring out on a daily basis. I don't really have any one set coping mechanism, I guess, because I think the way that I need to cope changes on depending on what I'm grieving, you know. So, you know, I still have a lot of fears about what my future may look like. And, you know, in regards to my fears about the future, you know, I think that's one of the ways that I cope with that is sometimes I just choose not to go there. And I tell myself that there's no point in fearing what may or may not happen, you know, and just trying to just be present in the life that I have now, you know, and because of that, not waiting too long to do the things that I want to do. You know, and grieving past things, I think, has just been an ongoing process of letting go of what I thought my life would look like. And by embracing what my life looks like now, you know, and looking for the things that chronic illness has brought to my life, not taken away, you know? So I think just, I guess if I had to classify it as like a tool that people could use, it would probably be just the act of mindfulness, you know, and just being present in my body, being present in my life, you know, with the people that are around me in that moment, and not jumping too far ahead into the future and not lingering too far in the past.
And I think that's a really great point, to be fully available to the present. And I know one of the things that really helped shift me out of the despair and the grief to the possibility was realizing that if my body had been able to do everything that it could and do it fairly well up until that point in my life where the chronic illness really came in and kicked me down on the standard SAD diet, you know, lifetime of disordered eating, many years of smoking prior to me giving up quite a while ago, all of those different things, then what could my body do if I actually looked after it? Like if I really... actually gave it good nutrition and rest and I loved it and I cared for it. And the possibility in that to me was that was really empowering and really exciting. And my body has certainly, it's been my experience that it's really lived up to that, because I went from physically and cognitively disabled to sort of back up and functioning within a 2-year period. Even though I'm still living with and managing it, and that's again, it's that is that mind shift, isn't it? That it's just that you've just got to be a constant accepting process that it's there, and it's present, and sometimes it gets to you and sometimes it doesn't get to you. I think it's just that the waves of it come and go. But yeah, still, nobody knows, like, because all of this, like AIP and nutrition therapy, it's still so new. Like, yeah, there's still so many possibilities. So I do think there is a lot of hope. And I think if people can grasp that, that the more we look after ourselves and the more we take responsibility and the more we have the courage to do that and make those choices, then who knows really what's possible? Who knows what's possible?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I like that you mentioned hope, because I think having hope, I think, is so crucial to living with chronic illness, you know. And there have been times when I have been very close to losing hope, you know, when the autoimmune protocol stopped working and, you know, my stress management techniques weren't working and the medicine wasn't working and it seemed like nothing was working. So it was important for me to also have people around me and in my corner who could have hope for me, even when I couldn't, you know, to help kind of sustain me until I could find something to grasp onto myself.
And I think it's important that people understand that everybody living with chronic illness has their bad days. Like, everybody still faces that. It's not like you reach this mystical point of level of healing where now everything just rolls effortlessly along. You know, it would be great if it was that way. I mean, people look at me and say, oh, well, you know, Kerry seems to be doing well. But it's not. On a daily basis, my illness is generally in my face, in fluctuations, big and small. So it's just part of that process. And what would be your tips, Jessie, for people going through that really bad period or bad day where you feel like you've got no hope and it's all black and nothing you're doing is working?
There's so many things, quite honestly, but I think I would have to say that for me, definitely, you know, being patient with yourself and with your circumstances, because they will change eventually. It might take way longer than you want it to, but they will change. You know, and I would forget to show yourself grace and show your body grace, because I've learned that some days your body is just doing the best that it can. And that's all that it can do. And you just have to be graceful about that. And then, like I mentioned before, just trying to not lose hope, you know, that the next day will look different, you know, or your life will look different 2 years from now, because it probably will, you know.
Great. And what's your best tips on just living with IBD? Because there must be little things that you learned how to do to sort of maximize being able to go out and do the things that you want to do. I mean, what sort of little IBD tips can you pass on to the people who are listening?
I have to think about that. I have to reach into my recesses of my brain, and it's so normal to me now. I have to
exactly have to think and that's about it.
I think one thing that has helped me, you know, because I do still work a pretty traditional 9-to-5 job part-time during the week. So being open as much as you're comfortable with the people who need to know about your disease and how it affects your life, you know. So for example, like with my primary supervisors in my job, they know that I have ulcerative colitis, they know that I have an autoimmune disease, and they know that sometimes it flares and it affects my ability to come into work that day. They don't know the extent of my symptoms, because they don't need to, in my opinion. But they know, you know, that if I call them on a day and say, you know, I'm really sorry, but I can't come in today, you know, but here's my plan to do X, Y, and Z to make up my time. I think that is really important, to have those open conversations with people who need to know, so they can accommodate you in the way that you need. Because I think it would be an unrealistic expectation to think that you, as the person living with a chronic illness, can accommodate everybody else, because sometimes they need to accommodate you. And that needs to be okay, you know. So I would say, yeah, definitely that. I think also learning how to say no to some things and setting up some appropriate and healthy boundaries for yourself. I think that was one of the hardest things that I had to learn, because as much as I hate to admit it, I am definitely a people pleaser. So I hate to let people down. And so learning how to say no to things or to disappoint people sometimes because I wasn't able to meet their expectations was difficult, but it's so important, I think, to protecting your energy levels and just protecting your space that you need or whatever it is that you need to regenerate yourself and to maintain, I think, healthy, just healthy living, you know? Mm. So yeah. And I mean, I think, I guess the other thing I would say, and this is pretty broad, but I guess just to really learn how to listen to what your body needs. I think, and I think this is probably true with every autoimmune disease, but I can really only speak to inflammatory bowel disease and ulcerative colitis, but how you feel physically can change from day to day to day. So it's not what you need one day, is it going to be the same thing that you need the next? So learning how to just tune into your body and acknowledge, you know, if your body needs more rest that day, or if you need to maybe be more careful about what you eat, or maybe you need to walk around and do some exercise that day, just being mindful of that, because what you need is going to change from day to day. So, yeah.
Great advice. And I think that's really so important, because it is this constantly changing process. And I think chronic illness can really be a crash course in self-development.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
Yeah, looking at all of those, you know, the boundaries that you didn't have, or you know, the people pleasing, it's a really good opportunity to look at all the ways that you've been living and doing for other people, and really about mm-hmm. getting back into understanding that self-care and self-love isn't selfish. It's actually, when you've got chronic illness, or really even when you don't have chronic illness, it's essential, because the more we look after ourselves, the better we feel, and the better we feel, the more we've got to give to other people mm-hmm. and the nicer we are to be around, quite honestly.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
So you've been married for a couple of years, and I know one of the things that I see in my emotional autoimmunity recovery support group over on Facebook is for the single people get really, really worried about dating mm-hmm. because they feel already this preemptive guilt, like, how can I inflict my chronic illness onto somebody else, or who's going to want me with chronic illness? So did you find yourself going through any of that sort of experience?
A little bit. I think my husband's name is also Jesse, by the way.
So wow.
I have to preface that when I talk about him. So when he and I first started dating, because we met in college, we had been dating, I think, for at least a couple of months before I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. So we did go through that a little bit where you know, I had to be open with this, you know, guy who I had known for a very short period about very, you know, graphic details about my ulcerative colitis. Mm. And it was really uncomfortable. And I think I knew it was going to be a point where, you know, I was going to know whether or not he was in it, you know, or he was going to be in it with me. Cause I knew that it was going to be life changing, and I guess I needed to know if he was going to be okay with that. And, I was very fortunate that it never fazed him in a second. You know, it took some adjusting, I think, for him, because my life changed so much and my energy levels changed and how I could interact with people changed so significantly. So that definitely was an adjustment period, but, I knew, you know, right away whether or not he was going to be okay with it. And I think that has also translated to a lot of my friendships. You know, I can't speak too much to the dating life. You know, I could definitely imagine how that can be very anxiety producing, because I feel that anxiety just when I'm trying to make friends with people. So I think, and honestly, it's still something that I'm learning how to be okay with and learning how to navigate, you know. But I think for me, one of the telltale signs is when if I tell somebody, you know, well, I have, if it comes up, you know, in conversation, or if they ask about myself, living with an autoimmune disease is a huge part of who I am. So I usually always say, well, you know, I have an autoimmune disease. It's called ulcerative colitis, you know, and sometimes it affects, you know, the way that I have to live my life. And if I can usually tell almost immediately if they're put off by that, or if they are just like, oh, okay, you know, and kind of roll along. So, that usually to me is an indicator of whether or not I feel like I can open up to people about it. And, you know, it's not something that I kind of drop on people as soon as I meet them, because it can be really off-putting, I think, for people, especially people in my age group, you know? So I kind of gently, you know, introduce the concept to people as I get to know them. But I've definitely had to get more comfortable over the years with social gatherings that revolve around food. I used to avoid things like that because I was so self-conscious about it for a long time. And eventually I got to a point where I needed friends, and I had been isolated for a long time. So I just kind of had to suck it up and start bringing my own food to social gatherings or start talking to people about it more. And I learned, and I'm still learning as I go along, that it doesn't bother people as much as I thought it was going to. Sometimes they just need a little education, and once they understand, it's not really an issue, and you just kind of move on.
So. I think I've found from my experience that the more comfortable I am talking about it, the more comfortable other people are. But hearing about it, and it's the fact that I will discuss it so openly, and it's just a fact of my life. And as you say, you'll easily see the people who don't want to take that into account, or who will sort of do the whole eye roll thing, or, you know, 'cause some people can be incredibly rude about it. But I always say, if I don't take this seriously, then nobody else is going to take it seriously, because people are always taking their cues from us in terms of how we want to be treated. So Hashimoto's celiac and antiphospholipid syndrome are part of my life, and they affect me on a daily basis. So you've got to be able and willing to have those open conversations and say, well, this is how it is. I can do this, but I can't do that. Or maybe we can negotiate doing that, but I might have to change something about it. And I think if we're really open and comfortable with it, it's just a practical thing that needs to be discussed and see what can be accommodated, then that makes it a lot more easy than if you're really hesitant or scared about it or worried about what other people are going to think, because they then take that cue from you, even unconsciously, and think, oh, well, you know, maybe she's making too much of a deal, big deal about it. Because it's that stigma, isn't it? Because I know people are only going to be listening to us, but as we're talking, I can actually see you. And, you know, you're this gorgeous, vibrant, healthy-looking young girl, now young woman. That's the biggest thing, isn't it? Because nobody looking at you would think there is anything wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it all kind of boils down to just learning how to advocate for yourself in a gentle way that's not, I guess, I don't know the right words. I'm going to say overly pushy, for lack of better words, you know, but just learning how to advocate for yourself and being okay with that, and being okay with knowing that some people aren't going to be okay with that. And if they aren't, then that's probably means they shouldn't be in your life. So.
What do you think, Jessie, is the biggest thing that people don't get about your particular chronic illness?
I think for me, and you kind of already touched on this before, and I think this is true for a lot of autoimmune diseases, when people look at me, they have no idea that I have a chronic illness and that I usually feel terrible a lot of the time. I think when people can't physically see something or have something tangible to associate with it, they either forget, or they don't believe you, or they don't take it seriously. So there's just a lack of understanding, I think, when it comes to that. I can't tell you how many people I've had come up to me and say, oh, well, you know, but you don't look sick. And I always want to say, well, how am I supposed to look? You know, or, and I think, people say, one time I had somebody tell me, cause I was eating, you know, the food that I was supposed to eat following the autoimmune protocol, you know, so it looks healthy, and people always feel the need to comment, you know, on what you're eating. And, somebody came up to me and said, oh, well, you know, I wish I had ulcerative colitis so I could be as skinny as you. And it's like, you think to yourself, like, you have no idea why I'm skinny, you know, and that I struggle so much to maintain weight and how that's a huge battle for me, you know? So I think that people not being able to see it, I think, is so challenging. And then because of that, they just don't understand your daily struggles, you know, and how your energy can fluctuate, how your health can fluctuate so quickly, you know, and so much. And I think when somebody doesn't live with that, it's really hard to understand. So.
Mm, absolutely. And I think sometimes wanting people to understand is not as important as getting people to just accept the boundaries that you're setting, yeah, because that's what's most important, because they're never going to get it until they get it. Right. You know, I was the same before I got this. Like, I knew, you know, some sort of chronic illnesses existed. I knew some people in my family have chronic illness. I sort of knew it up here. But when it actually happened to me, it was like, now I really get it. Like, now I really understand. And please let me apologize for all of the times that maybe I didn't give you the credit that you deserve for everything that you're doing just to keep yourself going. You know, so it's one big big sisterhood, I guess, or community. And it can be very isolating, as you said, and it can feel difficult to get people to understand. So what's been the best things to sort of help you get out of that isolation and educate yourself and take responsibility? Like, what were the big supports there for you?
I think in a way I needed a period of isolation for myself. I think I had mentioned before I was diagnosed, I was very, very social, and I had a big circle of people around me, but looking back, they weren't very supportive. I had a lot of people around me, but none of them really stayed. And I think it was very telling of the kinds of relationships that I surrounded myself with, you know, very superficial, because I liked to feel busy, you know, and I think that was a big contributing factor. So when I was first diagnosed, and a lot of those relationships and friendships that I had, you know, kind of started to wither away and I was left alone, I think I needed that for a period of time, almost as like self-protection, so I could figure out myself in a different way, you know, because I didn't recognize myself anymore. You know, when I looked in the mirror, I didn't recognize myself. I didn't know what I enjoyed doing anymore. You know, I didn't know how to live my life. So I needed time, a long time, you know, to really figure that out. And I think when I finally reached that place of ownership and acceptance, like I talked about before, which for me, like I said, came a couple years later, was when I finally felt comfortable in my skin again. And I think that's when I was able to start reaching out to people again, you know, and start investing in relationships again, because I didn't have to spend so much time on myself anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, absolute sense. And I really love what you said about that, because what a lot of people really struggle with is the loss of identity. Mm-hmm. When you become chronically ill, and it is a true loss of the self, like your old self and your future self, you know, the person you thought you were going to be, the things you thought you were going to do, the life you thought you were going to have, as well as the grief of the old life, the old you. And as you say, you're there saying, well, who am I now in this place, and who can I become? And then what can I do with this? So what do you think are the things that are really you're grateful for, I guess, in a sense, or that you're getting excited about, or that have been a positive thing about this chronic illness in your life?
I think, you know, I was thinking about this for a while. I think one of the things that I'm most grateful for is actually how living with a chronic illness has made me change the way that I view myself and my body. You know, I mean, I was young when I was diagnosed, so I struggled with a lot of your stereotypical body image issues, you know, but I also, I think for a long time was afraid to spend time alone with myself because I was afraid of what I would learn, you know, and I just always had so much self-doubt and so much anxiety and was never really 100% sure of who I was. And never really confident in that. So living with a chronic illness forced me to come face to face with a lot of those things. It forced me to start viewing my body differently, to develop a new relationship with my body that was centered around appreciation and love and taking care of my body, and also respecting my body for the messages that it was sending me, you know. And it's also been very empowering because, like I said, I mean, this past year especially, I know I keep referencing it, but it was such a significant period of transformation, I think, for me, of really, like I said, finally taking ownership of my disease, has really empowered me to finally embrace this life that I have, you know, and pursue, you know, this nutritional therapy practitioner program, you know, and start dreaming of a life, a new life, you know? So I think, yeah, living with a chronic disease has really empowered me to live into this strong person that I never really thought that I was until now.
So. And it does take strength and it does take courage to deal with this, but we need more people like you and like everybody else out there. You know, we need more people who do understand, and mm-hmm. we need more people who are willing to help, and we need more people who are able to discover new ways of dealing with this and, you know, giving people that helping hand, because it can be really isolating. I mean, no, one of the scariest things for me when I first developed Hashimoto's and was actually when I was researching and reading up about it and looking for some sort of help. And what I found was so many people in absolute despair. Like, it felt to me like the internet was this great big black hole of people in suffering and despair who were spiraling downwards. And for quite a while, I had to just stay off researching at all and just withdraw completely and try and get myself in some state of mind to calm myself mm-hmm. down, because there are people dying of these things. There are people being severely, profoundly disabled and mm-hmm. having to endure surgeries and things. So, I mean, how do you, you mentioned before you just try not to go there. What's your mm-hmm. best advice for people to stay out of those scary what if stories?
You know, I think, I mean, like you said, I have come face to face with that several times. You know, I work in hospice care, and we've had, you know, several young patients who've been admitted with, you know, terminal cases of colon cancer who have a, you know, history of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And that is one of my biggest fears, you know, what my future might look like. So you do come face to face with those things. So you can't pretend like they don't exist, because they do, you know? So I think for me, what has helped is acknowledging that it's a real fear, you know, and validating that, rather than pushing it to the side, but choosing not to live in fear that that is definitely going to be your reality, because none of us know that, you know? And for me personally, my faith, plays a really large role in that, you know, trusting that God has a purpose for me in my life right now, and you know, trying to live into that the best that I can, and that he's going to take care of me no matter what that looks like, you know, and not taking all of the responsibility of what my future may or may not look like, you know what I mean? So that has helped. That, I think, is really one of the primary things that grounds me.
And I think that's an important point, because I know for me it was a time of great spiritual growth, you know, because I think when you get something like this, it does cause you to question everything. and yeah. all of your relationships, even, you know, with the God of your understanding or your particular mm-hmm. faith. And I think there is so much potential to come out with a much greater belief and a much greater knowing or a much greater comfort that was available to you previously just through this experience of yeah. going through all of the fear and the doubt and the uncertainty and all of the what ifs. And I think that when we do soften into that and just think, well, this isn't really all on me, there, mm-hmm. whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And when I, you know, personally faced that sort of, you know, I said, well, to myself on a night, I was sure I was going to die. You are going to die one day, Carrie. You yeah. are. That's the truth of it.
It's like, true. No one comes out of
life. Why you've got this thought that you're going to go on eternally forever, but there is that time. And if it's today, if it's tonight, if it's right now, then that's it. There's no. So yeah. Funnily enough, facing that really big fear gave me this peace with it. And I was just like, well, okay, if this is my time, then this is my time. And I think if we think about those yeah. scary things about, you know, what if it's cancer, what if it's this, what if it's that, I sort of stop and think and acknowledge it and go, well, what would I do differently?
Yeah.
And there's not actually that much I would do differently than what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think, you know, you as a person living with chronic illness can control only so much. You know, I can control the food that I feed my body. I can control how much I move my body. I can control what medications I take. You know, so I focus on the things that I can control, and I, you know, pray and let go of the things that I can't, you know. And, you know, like you said before, yeah, no one comes out of life alive. So acknowledging that, I think is important, you know. Even working in end-of-life care that I do, and I work with death every single day, and I still find myself at times thinking, well, that's not going to happen to me. You know, I think we all think that at some point, and it's totally natural, and it's totally human nature. And I think it's okay to have fear. You know, I don't think it's realistic to ever not be afraid of the future or not be afraid of uncertainty, because I think that's human nature too. But I think there's a way you can learn to, like I said, control what you can control and then let go of what you can't. And learning how to live comfortably with the uncertainty.
And that's really beautiful work that you're doing. It takes a special sort of person to work in hospice and to be with people as they're going through their dying process and to give people comfort in that. And I think, you know, death is something as you know, Western society, we don't do very well, and mm-hmm. we don't do with any real grace. And yeah. so I think it's the more people who can have that lovely hospice approach, the better.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I appreciate it.
So thank you so much for talking yeah. to me today, Jessie. It's been an absolute pleasure. Can you tell everybody about, you know, what you're doing now and where they can find you if they want to know more about your story and the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. So I am one of the bloggers behind AIP Sisterhood. I blog together with my sister, Sam. And like I said before, we both are diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, but have very different stories. So we really complement each other well when it comes to, you know, our experiences living with inflammatory bowel disease. But we also love to just offer, you know, easy and attainable recipes for people who are trying to pursue the autoimmune protocol diet, because we know how overwhelming it can be. So as easy as we can make it is really our goal. So you can find more of my story and both of our stories really at AIPsisterhood.com.
Fantastic. So. And thank you so much for sharing with such honesty. And I look forward to maybe chatting to you again one day soon.
Yes, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
You have been listening to the Emotional Autoimmunity Podcast. You can read the show notes over at my website, www.emotionalautoimmunity.com, and sign up to get your free copy of Moving Through the Grief of Chronic Illness, a 9-phase model from anxiety to resilience. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and if you enjoyed this episode, I would love you to leave a review. Thanks for listening.